It's another Friday night. This is your SmackDown review here on the Solomonster Sounds Off channel. I, of course, am the Solomonster. I'm here. You know who wasn't in the building tonight? There are actually a number of faces that were not live in the building tonight. We did get Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, but Roman was only there by pre-tape. Roman Reigns, not on the show tonight. Randy Orton, not on the show. When I say on the show, I mean in the building. Roman not there, Randy not there. Even Solo Sikoa was MIA, the so-called tribal chief. Not on Raw tonight or SmackDown. Kevin Owens was there. Kevin Owens, of course, has had a very well-documented history with the Bloodline. And Kevin Owens has basically been terrorized by this group now for the past 4 years. And I said several days ago on the podcast, I said one of the things that I would be looking for on SmackDown this week would be the reaction of Kevin Owens and Randy Orton to Cody Rhodes accepting the tag team match for Bad Blood, him and Roman Reigns against Jacob Fatu and Solo Sikoa. Because what you can do coming out of Bad Blood is perfectly set up Cody's next feud, whether it's with Orton, whether it's with Owens. Just based on the sheer fact that these two men, how could these two men not be offended that Cody Rhodes, their supposed friend that they have stuck up for so many times, is now in bed, even if just for one match, for one night, with the man that has made their lives a living hell over the past several years. Randy Orton, right? 18 months of his career taken away, put on the shelf, thanks to the Bloodline. Kevin Owens, countless opportunities of the championship, just screwed over constantly by Roman Reigns and his family. I was looking to see what they would do tonight. Now, there was no Randy Orton on the show, but Kevin Owens was there. And we got a glimpse. We got a little glimpse. They didn't give too much away. But we got a glimpse into what Kevin Owens, his future might be coming out of Bad Blood in a couple of weeks. And the thing, you know, that I look at when I look at this, and I was the one who told you a few weeks ago after Bash in Berlin, I said, look, you know, Kevin Owens heel turn, this could be what we're in for. You do the heel turn, you do a rematch. I thought maybe they would do the rematch at Bad Blood. I thought maybe it would be Cody against KO. And that would be the title match for Bad Blood. They went in a different direction with it. But it's pretty clear to me after tonight that the Kevin Owens heel turn is all but confirmed. He didn't pull the trigger on that chair shot at the end of the show because yet again we saw Kevin Owens standing there with a steel chair in his hand. He had the opportunity to take this man's head off. He did not do it. They want to milk it a little bit more. They want to drag it out a little bit more. I'm sitting here going, take his fucking head off. Boy, did Cody Rhodes take his sweet time coming out at the end of the show to save his supposed friend, right? He let him get his ass kicked for a little bit before he came down to the ring for the assist. But it's pretty clear now where the Kevin Owens direction is headed in. Of course, that still leaves the question about Randy Orton. Where's Randy Orton going to fall in all this? I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see. LA Knight put his United States Championship on the line against Andrade in a match that was not always pretty. And there was a really awkward exchange that I will tell you about that took place when that match was over. And the other big question, who gets Nia Jax for the Women's Championship at Bad Blood? We were supposed to get an answer to that question tonight, and we are left with more questions than answers. We're going to go through this entire show. What I thought on the whole, I thought overall it was good. I'm not as quite hot on it. I saw the early results of the Twitter poll, and I'm not quite as hot on it as some people were. I actually think SmackDown has a really big problem right now. And the problem that SmackDown has is that outside of the main storyline, and there are a lot of people who are very tired of the Bloodline stuff. Some people love it. Some people are sick and tired of it. Wherever you fall in that, outside of the main story, outside of the stuff with Cody and Roman and KO now, right? And where's Randy Orton going to fall, right? That to me is compelling stuff. Outside of that and the occasional, you know, really good Andrade match that we get, SmackDown doesn't really have a whole lot to offer right now. It doesn't. And now we get this news about the show expanding to 3 hours By the way, that primal scream you heard the other day was me when I'm scrolling on my fucking Twitter and I read that news. Now we got SmackDown in a few months going to 3 hours. I don't care if it's for 6 months, if it's permanent, it doesn't matter. 3 hours of this show. They've got a lot of work to do. Triple H has a lot of work to do if he wants to make SmackDown as compelling as Raw has been on most weeks, because that's not what SmackDown is right now. I mean, if you're being honest with yourself, outside of that key storyline that's going on right now, and again, the occasional good match here and there, this show really is lacking. It's a lacking show. It's not as good as it should be, because the show, we've seen SmackDown in the past rock and roll. We know SmackDown can be a really good show, and it can be very Jekyll and Hyde. Some weeks it is very good, but a lot of weeks now they've just settled into this formula, and it really hit me watching that main event tonight, that six-man tag. How many fucking times have we seen this? And with Kevin Owens, no less, where we have no main event, but in the middle of the show, you know, big brawl breaks out, and we end up with the Street Profits or DIY and Kevin Owens in the main event in a six-man tag, right? They're in this creative rut right now that they really need to climb out of. And if this show is going to grow and expand to 3 hours, then they have a lot of fucking work to do. Because the show is 2 hours now, and they're struggling on a lot of weeks to make this show interesting. You know, one truly interesting thing on a two-hour show is not enough. There needs to be more than that. Two interesting things. Okay, now that's a little bit better, but still not good enough. They need to do better. I'm not as in love with this show as a lot of people seem to be. But we'll go through everything that happened here. What I want to tell you is that the show tonight opened with the Bloodline, minus Solo Sikoa, who I mentioned at the beginning was not on the show tonight. But the Bloodline entering the building through metal detectors in the back, one by one. And they were just bypassing security. The alarm would go off, and like Tonga Loa was like, "Yeah, get out of here." And then Tama Tonga would go through. The alarm would go off. You know, that stupid weird noise he does. And then he just walks off. Then Jacob Fatu goes through the metal detectors, and they pat him down. And one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to be patting down Jacob Fatu, because when you do, if you are one of these security geeks here, you end up getting your ass kicked. So they all got laid out, and then Jacob said, anybody else want to attempt a pat-down? And nobody else did. No more pat-downs here on SmackDown. Instead, we went out to the arena. It was time for the opening match, which was LA Knight defending the United States Championship against Andrade, who, of course, earned the right to challenge for the U.S. title with his last win over Carmelo Hayes. And you had to think coming into the show tonight that Carmelo Hayes would very likely factor into the finish of this match in some way, but you would be wrong. Let's just talk about this match, though. Andrade, at the beginning of this match, and this is actually very interesting, because at the beginning, he put his hand out for a handshake, and LA Knight accepted the handshake. That would not be the case when we get to the end of the match. You'll see what I was talking about at the beginning when I said there was an awkward spot, if you want to call it that, when the match was over. We'll get to that in a second. Both men went for their finishers less than a minute into the match. Both escaped each respective attempt. There was a spot during the match where Andrade ran him into the ring post. Then he went up to the top rope, and he moonsaulted over the ring post down onto Knight on the floor. Andrade went for the double knees in the corner. Knight moved out of the way and followed up with a DDT, which was good enough for a two count. LA Knight lifted Andrade, put him on the top turnbuckle, but Andrade elbowed Knight off the ropes, which led to the missed moonsault into the standing moonsault spot that Andrade does in every match. Andrade then hit the double knees in the corner, but Knight kicked out when he went for the pin. And then we had a couple of struggles for one LA Knight here in this match. The first struggle for LA Knight, he was trying to lift Andrade for a power slam. And he had a bitch of a time getting him up. Just not that he can't pick him up. Obviously, he's strong enough to pick him up. But just however they were kind of getting into the spot here, he didn't have him the right way, and he had to muscle him up. So, yeah, whatever, not a big deal. But he muscled him up onto his shoulders, and he hit the move. Then he hit a springing elbow drop where he stands on the middle rope, and then in one leap, he jumps up to the top rope, hits the giant elbow off the top. He went for a BFT. Andrade, though, rolled him up for a near fall. Then, with Andrade on the ropes, came the second struggle here for LA Knight. This was worse than the first. He tried his vertical leap onto the top rope, and I don't know why he does this spot. I guess he's just trying to do something that not everybody does in their matches. But I always hold my breath on this spot because it's just so easy to fuck up. You know, it's easier, I feel like, if you were a smaller person, you know, like a Will Ospreay or a Ricochet, right? They could do this with ease. So I always hold my breath on this. He tried to do the vertical leap into the superplex. We've seen him hit it, you know, plenty of times before. This was not one of those times. First try, he couldn't stick the landing. Abort mission. Then he tried again. He slipped again. Lost his footing. So now he's holding on to the ropes. And Andrade, he seemingly called for an audible on the spot. He shoves LA Knight off the ropes. And then he attempts a missile dropkick. Knight moves out of the way of the dropkick at the very last second. And Andrade crashes and burns. Knight puts him away with the BFT for the clean win. No Carmelo Hayes. Pinned him in the middle of the ring, 1-2-3. And he retains the United States Championship. They had a good match, but it was a rough night for LA Knight, which was also, you know, look, it's one of those things where when one thing goes wrong, like everything starts to go wrong. And I feel like that may have been a little bit of what we saw here. He also was bleeding a little bit from above the eye. I didn't see how it happened. So he got kind of busted open a little bit. The two of them had a very awkward exchange when the match was over, where they came face-to-face. Knight motioned. Now they're talking. We can't hear what they're saying. But LA Knight motioned. He pointed over at the corner where they had the botched spot. So he was clearly referencing whatever happened over there. Again, we couldn't hear exactly what he was telling him. But then he put his fist out for what looked like a fist bump. Andrade stares at his hand, and instead of bumping him back, he extends his hand for a handshake, just like he did at the beginning of the match. So he puts his hand out. LA Knight, instead of shaking the man's hand, looks at it. He's like looking at his hand like he's never seen a handshake before. Even though he did at the beginning of the match, he's just staring at his hand. And now we have like a stare down going on here. This is very awkward. And so what Andrade ends up doing is Andrade got tired of standing there like an idiot. He grabs Knight's hand. Knight pulls it, or tries to pull his hand away. Andrade's not letting him do it. And he forces his hand open. And then he gives him a handshake and he raises LA Knight's arm. I don't know what that was all about. It was very clear to me, though, when this match was over, that LA Knight was angry. I mean, he was pissed off. And it might have just been at himself. It might have just been at the situation, you know, because of the botched move on the ropes. I don't know if he was maybe upset that Andrade called for an audible. I thought Andrade had a great save there. You know, when he just shoved him off the ropes, did the missile drop kick instead. Because, you know, clearly Knight was going to set up for the superplex. So maybe he called an audible. And I don't know, maybe he was upset about that. I think, and this is just what I think, because I went back and I watched what happened. I think one of the things he may have been upset about, Andrade had one foot on the top rope when he was perched up there waiting for Knight to come up. He had one foot on the rope. And I think, you know, normally, as I think back to other LA Knight matches where he does that spot, whoever's on top, I think usually their feet are planted on the middle rope. So they're on the top rope, but they're actually standing on the middle rope, I think. And Andrade wasn't doing that. And so when LA Knight went to go leap up, he didn't really have a lot of room to maneuver himself. So maybe that was part of why he was upset. Maybe that's part of why, you know, he couldn't get his footing up there. Whatever it was, you know what? Shit happens. Shit happens. He'll get over it. It doesn't change the fact that they still had a good match. But like I said, every time he does that spot, man, I hold my breath because he hits it more often than not, but those times that he doesn't, it's like, ugh, you know, like you don't really have a lot of room for error on that move. You either do it or you miss it, and everyone's like, ah, man, you know, tonight was one of those nights. I was surprised not to see Carmelo Hayes involved, but we did see Carmelo Hayes because he came after the match was over. He didn't partake in the match itself, but he was backstage when this was over. After the break, Andrade was backstage. He's walking by, and he bumps into Carmelo, who was a little too happy about Andrade losing that match. He said Andrade choked harder than the Kings did against the Lakers years ago. Well, at least it was. At least they weren't in Seattle, and he didn't make a crack about the Supersonics, or else he would have gotten 8 minutes straight of molten hot lava heat, like Elias did many years ago on Raw. One of the all-time great segments on Raw in the last decade plus. I every now and then I will come across that clip where I will go seek it out just to listen to the crowd reaction again, and Elias and Kevin Owens just sitting there trying to absorb like what's going on. I guess that's one you don't want to make a crack about the NBA stuff in Seattle. I guess that doesn't sit well with them. So anyway, this quickly escalated into a full-fledged brawl. It saw Andrade bump into the camera and all of his sweat rubbed off on the camera lens. He fucked up the camera lens. It looked like the camera was filming underwater. Anyway, we're getting a best of seven after all, because next week it's part six. Andrade one-on-one against Carmelo Hayes. And this is what I was talking about. This is one of the things of late on SmackDown that you can rely on, is Andrade going out there and having a kick-ass match. That's great. But SmackDown needs more than just that and whatever fucking Roman Reigns or Kevin Owens happens to be doing. But Andrade has consistently been one of the best parts of SmackDown, you know, bell to bell. It's not like he's, you know, out there cutting promos every week, but he's going out there and having banger matches. And this whole series that he and Carmelo Hayes have been having has been very enjoyable. So I'm happy that they're extending this. Then they took us to taped footage, and this was the best part of the entire show. On the field at Georgia Tech University in Atlanta, where Roman Reigns played college football, Atlanta also being the site of bad blood, they shot this cinematically, and they had music over it. And they used a song that actually featured a credit in the song for Titus O'Neil. It's a song called I Am the Storm, if you want to look it up. But it was featuring Titus O'Neil, and Titus has a speaking part early in the song. Not that he's actually singing, but I thought that I saw that. I'm like, wait a minute. Did I read that right? Is he singing in the song? So a bunch of black SUVs pull up to the stadium. Roman Reigns gets out of one of them. He walks onto the field. Then we see a single white car being driven onto the field, not like the middle of the field, but like, you know, onto the sideline of the field. And who hops out of the driver's seat but the WWE champion himself? Cody Rhodes jumps out of the driver's seat. Roman is waiting for him. Cody meets him midfield. So they're on the 50-yard line now. We got a stare down here in the middle of... Does the stadium have a name? I don't even know if the stadium itself has a name. Georgia Tech Stadium, is that what it's called? I don't know if the stadium has its own name. Maybe it's named after somebody. Maybe it's named after Roman Reigns. They can call it Tribal Chief Field. So Roman said that everything you lay your eyes on in here is his. He shed blood, sweat, and tears on this field many times. So that means this is his field, which means that this is his stadium. And if this is his stadium, you better believe this is his city. And he asked Cody, what have you done for my city? Cody said that on the other side of the stadium is Techwood Studios. Down the street, Center Stage. And what used to be the Omni, now the State Farm Arena. Said multiple generations of his family have bled for this city and in this city. You played football here, thank you. And then you went back to the beach. This is your field, but this is my home. And he's not, you know, look, he's not wrong about that. I mean, Dusty, you know, look, Dusty may have cut his teeth and gotten over in Florida, but, you know, Dusty in Atlanta, it's legendary shit. So Roman said, let's cut to the chase. Enough of the history lessons. Let's get down to the facts. You signed yourself into a lose-lose situation. You have everything to lose. Dealing with people who have nothing to lose. Consider Roman. Consider me, he said. They took Jimmy from me. They took my wise man. They took my bloodline and my Ulafala. And Roman said that he doesn't have anything to lose. For the first time in a long time, there's no weight on my neck. It's all on yours. I'm a man with no country now. Cody says, you're telling me all of this like I'm supposed to be surprised. He said, look, I told you before WrestleMania the first go-around that you would be standing here as a chief without a tribe. They took Jimmy. They took your wise man. They took your Ulafala. You really think you have nothing to lose, though? He said, take a look around WWE. We already have a tribal chief. It's not you. We have a WWE champion. That's not you. So if you can't even beat your own bloodline, who's standing here right now? I'll tell you, it's not the biggest box office attraction in the history of WWE. It's not that guaranteed WrestleMania main eventer. No, 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 no. It's the guy they used to call Roman Reigns. Roman asked him, what do you want? Just tell me what you want. Cody said that he wants Roman's word. He wants his word that he will have his back so that he can have Roman's. And Roman gave his word. He said he would have Cody's back. I'll have your back, he said, but just understand this. When it's all said and done, I'm taking back what's mine. Roman went to go leave. Cody, though, stepped in his way. Cody told him, it's not yours to take. Roman told him, you're in my way. So Cody stepped aside and Roman said, you're in my way in life. And then he walked off. This was awesome. In a word, this was awesome. The production on this was great. It, like I said, it was shot cinematically and they had the music, at least at the beginning. I think in the background throughout also, but just the way it was shot was very well done. They had the drone shots at the beginning and everything. And just seeing them in the middle of this giant field in this empty stadium, it was a great visual. And also relevant, you know, with Bad Blood taking place in the same city. So you had that tie-in where, you know, why are they in Atlanta? Well, that's why. Because Bad Blood is in Atlanta. They both have history in that city. Cody, I like Cody calling back to what he told Roman in that promo before last year's WrestleMania. I thought that was nice. And getting Roman to commit to watching his back, which he did ultimately. But then Roman also making it clear, look, I'm not only back to take on my family and take back the Ulafala, I'm back to take the championship that I held for 4 years. You know, I'm back to collect what is mine. Made that very clear to Cody here. I would like to see them do Cody Roman 3, if it's going to happen. Cody Roman 3, because they certainly teased it. That doesn't guarantee it's going to happen, but if it does, I think Saturday night's main event in December would be the perfect place for it. That's their first show back live in prime time on NBC in many, many years. You want to make that first Saturday night's main event a big deal? And there's no other, after War Games, there's no PLE until the Royal Rumble, which is the beginning of February, right? Well, you know, the Raw debut on Netflix on January 6th is going to be a big deal, but these guys are not on Raw. Now, that doesn't mean that Roman and or Cody will not be advertised for that first Raw on Netflix. In fact, I'd be surprised if one or both of them weren't on that show. But they're SmackDown guys. So it gives you a big main event, big championship match, you know, in between those PLEs. But you can make a big splash on that first Saturday night's main event special back. Look, you know, they ran Hogan and Andre. They ran that match back. The rematch was on NBC in prime time, live, in front of 33 million people. They did the rematch there for the championship. Andre won the belt that night, so it's not like they haven't had big title matches on NBC before. So that would be my suggestion. I think that would be cool. I could see them doing it at Crown Jewel. You know, I wouldn't do it there, but you got that Saudi show at the beginning of November. Once Bad Blood is out of the way, if they want to go right into Roman and Cody before they get to War Games at the end of the month, they could do the title match in Saudi Arabia. I think that show is on November 2nd, I want to say. So that's another possibility. You can't discount the possibility that if the match is going to happen, it could potentially happen there. When they cut back live, as this segment was ending, Kevin Owens was watching the video on a screen backstage. And Byron Saxton walked up to him and asked him if he had any thoughts on what he just saw. And Owens looked exasperated, and just walked off without saying a word, but his expression said it all. And as I said at the beginning of the review, this is what I was hoping to see coming into the show tonight. What is the reaction from Randy Orton and Kevin Owens going to be to Cody agreeing to partner with Roman Reigns? Clearly, Owens was not happy. And I thought that might be where they leave it. And I'm like, ah, is that all they're going to give us? But they actually didn't give us that much more because he still didn't get a chance to explain himself. But we would not yet be done with Kevin Owens. Then, a shout out to Richie. Thank you for the 10 spot, Richie. And thank you, everybody, who is joining me. All 900 plus of you so far here tonight. We are live. Live as live can be. Let me check my pulse. Yes, we are live on a Friday night. Richie, thank you again. But we got to talk about this. Unfortunately, we have to talk about this. It was the sequel from 2 weeks ago. It was Apollo Crews. Now, am I the only one who has made this connection? But the last few weeks, when we have seen Apollo Crews in the ring, he's changed his gear up a little bit. He looks like a smaller version of Zeus. He's got the long black and silver tights. That's what Zeus used to wear. It was the long black. It had the Z. I think it had like a stripe, like a silver stripe on it. He's like a smaller, like if you took Zeus and maybe you left him in the dryer a little too long, that's what I see when I see Apollo Crews in this gear. I'll tell you one thing, though, Zeus would have a better win-loss record than Apollo Crews does. I'll tell you that. Apollo Crews, though, one-on-one against Giovanni Vinci, who came into this match with a cool 0-1 win-loss record since his grand return a few weeks ago to WWE. We talked about what happened in his first match back. He was all full of himself. He was all cocky. He got crucifixed into a pin and literally was beaten in 3 seconds in his debut match. That was the big debut for Giovanni Vinci. This did not go much better for him than it did in week one. The best I could say about this, at least he got some offense in this time. He got none in the first match. This one, at least he got some offense in. Crews, by the way, he did not get an entrance. Vinci did, but this time there was no jacket. There were no shades. He didn't have a big smile on his face. He looked deathly serious on his way down to the ring. Vinci attacked him and worked a ground and pound. Then he body slammed Crews into the ropes a few times. Vinci set up for a powerbomb. Crews, though, reversed into a crucifix and pinned him again. The exact same way he did the first time. Pinned this man in the middle of the ring, 1, 2, 3. So that now makes Giovanni Vinci a cool 0-2 since making his re-debut on television. After the match, Vinci attacked Crews at ringside, threw him into the barricade, put him back in the ring, and then dropped him with a brain buster. So they seemingly have a direction for Giovanni Vinci. I am not going to say that it's a good direction, but he has a direction. Now, whether or not that direction is going to lead to anything fruitful for him on this roster, I am skeptical. Because whatever their plan is for this man, now eventually he's going to win. He may win the next one. I don't think he's going to go winless for the rest of his career. So eventually he's going to win a match. And my question is this. Is anybody going to care? When we get to that point, whether it's next week, whether it's 4 weeks from now, 6 weeks from now, he finally wins a match. He finally beats Apollo Crews, who everybody beats anyway. Apollo Crews has very little credibility on this roster. He's a tremendous athlete, but just in terms of his booking, right? He has no credibility at all. I'm sorry, he doesn't. So when Vinci, after losing to him multiple times, eventually beats this man, which he will, is anybody going to care? Ask yourself that question. Are you going to care? I'm not even sure I'm going to care. I have already basically just sort of given up on this being any sort of grand push to maybe a U.S. title contention. Yeah, we may get there eventually, and he'll be good for a TV match against LA Knight. He'll be beaten, and that'll be the end of it. It's a shame, you know, because he is a talented guy. I didn't expect more than maybe a solid mid-card push for him. He may yet get that, but I question whether or not it will even mean anything when we get there. You know, it's certainly one way that you could try to make somebody stand out, but these losing streak angles, they rarely do any good. Rarely do they do any good. It's one thing if you're already established. If you have an already established talent, and then they kind of fall on hard times and you do a losing streak angle with them, they have that credibility with the audience, right? They're established. Vinci is not. You know, and he's been around for a while. He was part of Imperium. He was doing that in NXT, NXT Tag Team Champions. He was part of Imperium on the main roster. It's not like he's brand new, but he doesn't have that sort of that equity that a lot of the other stars do who could withstand something like that. If you're telling that story with somebody that the people care about, because we see losing streak angles with people, it's not like it's never been done before, but it just makes it that much harder when you have somebody here who people already don't give a shit about because you haven't given them a reason to. Now you're just going to beat them and beat them. When they finally win, I just question whether or not it's going to mean a damn thing. I don't think it will. I hope for his sake they could turn it around and they have a better idea for him down the road. But what they're doing right now, it's my attitude. Who gives a shit? This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. If any of you have a dog, then you know what it's like to have to walk the dog. And if you walk your dog, you probably walk them with a leash. Now imagine going online with that ExpressVPN. It would be like walking your dog in public without a leash. Most of the time, you'll probably be fine. But what if one day your dog wanders off? What if CM Punk is walking Larry one day with no leash, and Drew McIntyre drives by and dognaps him? Because that's really all that's left in their feud, is to have McIntyre dognap Larry, chain him to the radiator, and make him watch Jack Perry matches. That's what it's like using the internet with that ExpressVPN. It would be like being chained to a radiator, watching Jack Perry matches all day long. You don't want that. Nobody wants that. Every time you connect to a network that has no encryption, which really could be anywhere in public, your online data is not secure, which means any hacker on that network can easily access and steal your personal data. They could do it with their eyes closed. It doesn't take much technical know-how, especially when you assume they probably do this sort of thing every day. Those same hackers can make up to $1,000 per person selling their personal data on the dark web. Scary, isn't it? ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure tunnel between your device and the internet. What makes ExpressVPN the best VPN is that it's easy to use. Just pull up the app, you click one button, and you're protected. It also works on all of your devices, including phones, laptops, tablets, and smart TVs. There's a reason why ExpressVPN is rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. You know, when I was in Tampa earlier this year for the Royal Rumble, at our Airbnb. I'm away from home. I made sure that I had my ExpressVPN app on my phone and on my laptop because I wanted that peace of mind knowing that I was protected. I don't just have podcast-related files saved on there. I have a lot of personal information also. I do my online banking on there. I needed to know that my devices were safe. And they were. It's a safety issue. Again, you may be fine without it, but why take the chance? Why put yourself in a situation that you don't want to be in? And when it happens to you, you'll be left kicking yourself that you didn't take that extra step to avoid a catastrophe like that. It's just not worth the risk. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. Kevin Owens was sitting in the back when Byron Saxton yet again approached him and asked for a comment about what he saw earlier in the video with Cody and Roman. Owens said, look, if I'm going to say anything, I'm going to go out there and say it. And so he headed off into the arena. Shout out to David, by the way, who gifted, I believe, 20? Was it 20? 20 channel memberships from David Thiering, who's dropping even more bombs, man. This is amazing. David, thank you. And all of you who were gifted memberships, thank David for that. And that led to Kevin Owens coming down to the ring to address the audience. He got in the ring and didn't look very happy. He said people are wondering what he thinks about this whole situation with Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns and how it makes him feel to see Cody teaming with Roman after everything that's happened over the last several years. And before he could answer, he was interrupted. He was interrupted by Tama Tonga, Tagovailoa, and Jacob Fatu. The Bloodline is here, minus Solo Sikoa. So Tama Tonga was doing that weird chant that he does. He kept doing that over and over again. And he said, last week, Roman and Cody embarrassed the tribal chief. Big mistake. They're going to get what's coming to them at Bad Blood. But tonight, Kevin Owens is going to get what he has coming to him by orders of the real tribal chief, Solo Sikoa. Owens said, look, before you start talking again, we all know how this is going to end, so why don't you get in here so I could punch you in your stupid face? He neutralized Tama Tonga and Tagovailoa briefly, which led to a stare down with him and Jacob Fatu, but the tag team champions recovered quickly. They attacked Owens from behind, and it was 3-on-1 when Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa ran out for the save to no reaction. Shatter Machine to Tama Tonga and the Bloodline retreats. You know, I have to say it was sad hearing them come out to no reaction. Nobody cares. They were getting over there for a while, and now it's like, nobody cares about DIY. It got even worse, by the way, later in the show. Nick Aldis came out with an army of officials to keep the peace, and he got into the ring, and he made a six-man tag team match for tonight's main event with Owens and DIY against the Bloodline. Typical lazy way that they always come up with these main events, as if Nick Aldis came on the air tonight without one. I know that's been a wrestling trope now for 20 years, but still ridiculous. And no explanation yet from Kevin Owens about how he feels about Cody Rhodes and that whole situation. But I'm okay with that because they want to milk it for at least another week. It didn't look to me like we might even get Cody Rhodes live on the show. So I was thinking, well, maybe they want to wait until Cody is there. Maybe wait until Randy Orton is back, get his thoughts on the whole situation because he's not there tonight. We know where this is headed. You know, we got a tease for it at the end of the show tonight. They didn't have to give it away tonight. Frankly, if it's going to happen, I don't think it happens until probably either at Bad Blood or after Bad Blood. But I'm okay with that. I can see where it's headed. I think it's going to be sweet when it finally happens. I've been waiting for this. And you don't need to give everything away right away. Again, this just happened last week that we found out that Cody and Roman have agreed to be tag team partners. That was only a week ago. This part of the story, I'm okay with them taking a few more weeks to let it play out. It was Bayley and Naomi up next against Nia Jax and Tiffany Stratton in a Tornado Rules tag team match. Of course, you knew it would happen. Now, the stipulations I should mention for this match were that if the babyfaces won, the one who got the winning fall, whether it's Bayley or Naomi, they would challenge Nia Jax for the women's championship at Bad Blood. But if they lost, whoever lost the match for their team would be banished from SmackDown forever, which, of course, forever in wrestling is about 3 months. But they would be gone from SmackDown, presumably shipped off to Monday Night Raw. Those were the stipulations for the match. So naturally, you had to expect there would at least be one spot where one of the babyfaces was going to try to win the match and the other one would interrupt the pin because they want to challenge for the women's title at Bad Blood. And that's what happened here. Bayley hit Tiffany with a suplex, went for a pin, and Naomi broke it up. And so for a moment there, we had some strife between the two friends. But they quickly patched things up and they landed a double back body drop on Nia Jax. We don't get enough of those these days. We don't get enough back body drops anymore. I don't go to too many shows anymore because I'm usually here working. But if I did, I'm going to bring a sign. Or maybe one of you, bring a sign. Bring a sign that says, bring back the back body drop. I feel like we don't get enough of that. Those and the atomic drop. Later in the match, Naomi avoided a powerbomb from Nia, but she reversed into a facebuster. Tiffany tried to break it up, the subsequent cover, with a swanton bomb off the top, but she landed on Nia by accident. Tiffany then got dropped by a 1D from Bayley and Naomi. Nia landed a Samoan drop on Bayley, but at the same time, Bayley pulled her over into a crucifix pin. that they were very close to the ropes. So as Bayley, after the Samoan drop, crucifixes Nia over into a pinning predicament, at the same time, Naomi jumps forward, gets a jackknife pin on Nia Jax, and this got all fucked up. Because the first thing that happened, because they were so damn close to the ropes, is that when Naomi flipped over for the jackknife pin, her foot was on the bottom rope. So Jessica Carr is not going to start the count. She's trying to point out your foot's on the rope, right? So that's number one. Then when she took her foot off, it looked to me, and maybe it was just the camera angle, but it looked to me like her feet were underneath the bottom rope. And Jessica Carr waited for a second or two. She hesitated. And then she's like, ah, fuck it. And she counted the three. This was a very clunky, clumsy finish to what I thought was an otherwise okay match. But we got the double pin. I know a lot of you predicted that last week, that this would end in a double pin. Let me talk about this first. The accidental swanton by Tiffany Stratton, that keeps that story alive with her and Nia. Will she, won't she cash in? When's their friendship going to, you know, finally break down? Is she going to cash in on her or not? I don't think they can keep my interest with that story, frankly, for much longer. A few more weeks, maybe. They're going to have to do something. They can't just keep teasing it for another 3 or 4 months like this. Meanwhile, the babyfaces are saved from having to leave SmackDown, or one of them anyway. But who gets the shot? Who gets the women's championship match of Bad Blood? There was mass confusion here at the end. Bayley didn't know what was going on. Naomi didn't know what was going on. The announcers didn't know what was going on. The fans didn't know what was going on. So you would think, though, watching that, okay, this means a triple threat is coming our way, a Bad Blood. But in the back later on, Nick Aldis said that next week, the way he's going to resolve this, it's not with a triple threat. The way he's going to resolve this is Bayley and Naomi are going to have a one-on-one match. They're going to wrestle each other next week. And the winner of that match will then go on to challenge Nia Jax for the title of Bad Blood. I don't have my trusty magic eight ball here, but let's pretend I did have it in front of me right now. I'm going to shake up my magic eight ball. And I'm going to ask my magic eight ball, magic eight ball, are Tiffany Stratton and or Nia Jax going to interfere in this match next week? And I would bet you almost anything that if I had my magic eight ball here right now, it would say yes. One or both of them will be involved in that match in some form or fashion next week. Pretty good chance this is still going to end up as a triple threat at Bad Blood. I was thinking like how I might go about doing this. And maybe this is what we'll end up getting. We'll see. But what I was thinking is, you know, Tiffany is the one who gets involved. It's not Nia. Because really, I mean, Nia Jax should know better, right? Dumb babyface syndrome, right? The heels are not immune from it, too. You have plenty of dumb heels. If Nia gets involved and the match gets thrown out, you know exactly what's going to happen. Nick Aldis is going to come out, and Nick Aldis is going to say, well, now you got to wrestle both of them at Bad Blood. You just fucked yourself. So what if Tiffany ran out and got involved in some way and got caught? Because she feels like she has to make it up to Nia. We get a backstage segment next week, and Nia's not happy with Tiffany. You hit me with that swanton. What are you doing? And maybe Tiffany says, I'm going to make it up to you somehow. And in her mind, her way of making it up to Nia is going out there and you know, attacking them and getting involved. But it ends up blowing up in her face, and then we get the inevitable announcement that it's going to be a triple threat match of Bad Blood. But what if Tiffany was smarter than all of them? Instead of being a dumb heel, what if it was all by design? And Tiffany wants a triple threat match of Bad Blood because, you know, soften up Nia makes her job harder to keep her championship. With the idea that Tiffany will turn around and cash in her money in the bank, or try to, at Bad Blood. See, so that's the sort of thing that I think would make Tiffany look smart and very duplicitous. I don't know if that's the direction that they're going in, but that was one thought that I had. Maybe it's Tiffany and not Nia, and it just kind of blows up in her face. But like, you know, wink, wink. Like, oh, I didn't know that was going to happen. Still feels like we're going to get a triple threat, though, at Bad Blood, if I had to venture a guess. Hey, shout out to CJ. Haven't seen CJ in a while, one of our mods. What's going on, CJ? Good to see you. I see this top bar on the right side, and it's just a sea of red. And I just have to say that we're not done yet, but I have to just say thank you to everybody, in all seriousness, who have dropped bombs tonight so far and have supported. This is the second week in a row of madness here on a Friday night, and you have made my weekend. So I say thank you for that. They aired a Chelsea Green vignette, which featured her doing her best Duke the Dumpster Drozzy impression, literally taking out the trash. She was outside somewhere. She was even wearing the sanitation outfit. She had the gloves on, the whole nine yards. She also beat up a mannequin with Meechan's face taped to it. This is all leading to a dumpster match between Meechan and Chelsea Green in 2 weeks. The main event was supposed to be Kevin Owens and DIY against the Bloodline. Owens came to the ring, but when they played DIY shitty music, nobody came out. They cut to the back, and what do they see? They see DIY getting their asses handed to them backstage by the Bloodline. Taken out. Laid out. Kevin Owens is in the ring. He's like, ah, you know what? Fuck this. He gets out of the ring. He meets the Bloodline as they're now making their entrance. He meets them on stage, and he fights them 1-on-3. He don't care. So now we have a handicap match going on here. Until the Street Profits came out to make the save, and they ended up replacing DIY in the match. So we just substituted one team for another. Fatu got a chance to shine here a little bit in this match, as did Montez Ford for a while. Owens tagged in immediately. Instead of getting in the ring, he climbs down from the apron. He does a lap around the ring, Braun Strowman style. You know, Braun Strowman is not technically a part of the SmackDown roster, but fuck it, if I could find it here. I don't know what I did, but there it is. There he is. I couldn't find it. I don't have one for Kevin Owens, but Kevin Owens basically did, it was the Strowman Express, but with, it's a smaller train. Smaller train than we're used to seeing here. But we got a Kevin Owens Strowman Express. Clotheslined everybody on the outside. Hit a frog splash onto Tongaloa from the apron. Back inside, Owens hit a cannonball and a swanton on Tonga for a near fall. Owens went to the top. Tama Tonga cut him off. Tonga went for a superplex. Owens, though, countered with his usual fisherman buster off the ropes. A pin attempt got broken up by Tongaloa. Owens then hit a stunner on Tama, but Tongaloa pulled Owens off and sends him into the ring steps. And for reasons that escape me, the referee called for the disqualification. Or I assume it was a disqualification. It was never announced. I'm assuming a DQ. Maybe it was a no contest. He just waved the whole fucking thing off. Maybe he was just like, you know what? That's it. I've lost control. I've had enough. I can't take this. I'm going home. Whatever it was, and I'm going to assume it was a DQ. What a shitty way to end a match. This was fucking terrible. How is that a disqualification after everything we see every single week on these shows? And even in the past, right, we've heard people say, oh, well, you know, the steps, technically the steps part of the ring, so that's not a disqualification, right? We've had people get thrown into the steps. We get people thrown into the steps every fucking week, but it's part of the ring. It's attached to the ring, so it's not like a foreign object, so therefore it's not a disqualification. Well, tonight it was, and what a terrible finish it was. So that was dumb. After the match, Montez Ford hit a flip dive out onto the Bloodline outside, got the crowd all pumped up. And then for the next several minutes, the brawling continued, and this just seemed to go on forever. It felt like they realized they were short, and they had a stall to drag things out until they got to the final, you know, part of the angle that they were shooting here. Like they needed to stretch for time or something. The Bloodline got the better of the baby faces. They set up for a triple powerbomb on Owens through the announce desk. Stop me if you've heard this before. But before they could do it, here comes DIY. And DIY stumbles out from the back like the walking wounded. Tommaso Ciampa is holding his neck. Johnny Gargano is holding his neck. I'm holding my face like this. Like, because what ends up happening? DIY comes out and they get laid out by the Bloodline again. They get their asses kicked again. by the Bloodline. So let's recap here for a second, shall we? DIY gets taken out of the match, and they get replaced by the Street Profits, only for DIY to then run back out later to make the save and once again get beaten down by the Bloodline. So they are the crash test dummies, basically, of WWE. And I should also mention that when they ran out, they yet again got no reaction. So, good job. So the Bloodline now sets their sights on Kevin Owens, and finally, out comes Cody Rhodes. Nice of him to join! Nice of him to finally mosey on out here and join. He runs out with a chair. He launches the chair at Tongaloa's face, because Tongaloa's on the outside, and as Cody is coming down, he just launched it right at his fucking face. So then Cody gets in the ring, and he's got Jacob Fatu in front of him. Fatu super kicks the chair out of Cody's hands. Cody comes back with a Cody cutter, though, drops Jacob Fatu, and Fatu rolls out to the floor. Now Kevin Owens picks up the chair. And he stands behind Cody. Now, we've seen this scene before, right? We've seen this before. This was before Bash in Berlin. It was like deja vu. Cody's got his back turned. He's looking at the Bloodline down the aisleway. We see Kevin Owens in the background standing behind him. He's got that chair in his hand. Everybody's waiting to see what's going to happen. Cody, by the way, he took forever to turn around. He was like going out of his way to like not turn around. He took so much time. And finally, he finally turns around, and it looked like Owens was going to hit him with the chair. Owens instead drops the chair. And Cody extends his hand. Owens shook it, and the two of them hugged. It wasn't the most enthusiastic hug on the part of Kevin Owens, but they hugged, and the show ended. Boy, Cody took his sweet time coming out to the ring to save his friend, didn't he? I was sitting here waiting for this guy to just take his fucking head off with that chair. I would have. Took an awfully long time. This formula, I'll say it one more time. This formula of, you know, setting up the obligatory six-man tag main event for the show with the Bloodline, it's just old. It's copy and paste bullshit. It's very lazy. It's very boring. Even when you end up with a good match or a decent match, so what? So what? Give me something different. Give me something interesting. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of this copy and paste bullshit every fucking week like this. So I'm not a fan of that. And by the way, when I'm watching Montez Ford do that flip dive out of the ring and he's getting the crowd all fired up and they pan back to the crowd shot and everyone's going nuts and it makes me angry all over again that they fucking dropped the ball on him and didn't do shit with him after they teased it last year. They pulled back on it. And he's another one who just is in this rut where he's just doing the same shit every single week. It's like the hamster on the wheel, right? You're spinning and spinning and spinning, but you're not really moving. You're not really going anywhere. So I'm tired of that formula. We get the good Andrade match. We get that key angle. As I said, SmackDown just doesn't have a whole lot else to offer right now. The women's stuff is just not clicking with me on this brand. Tiffany Stratton, each week that goes by, she feels less over than the week before. Now, I'm hopeful that will change when she finally cashes in, she wins the title, that things will kind of go back to normal with her. But, you know, it's like, again, she's got the briefcase, and we just don't have to do anything with her until she cashes in, and it won't matter, because when she cashes in, she'll probably win, and then she'll be the champion. And everybody will go back to, you know, giving a shit. But every week that goes by, it just feels like a little less and a little less. That's why I'm like, all right, can we kind of move this along here? Even if she's not going to cash in right now, there's only so much that you can do in this story that she's in where you can tease the same thing every single week. So with the women's stuff, again, it's nice that we at least have a women's mid-card program going on. It's not much of one, but Chelsea and Meechan, they're going to have that dumpster match in a few weeks, but there's just nothing compelling when it comes to any of that stuff. Now, Raw, you've got Rhea and Liv because there's a history there. It means more. And Rhea is the most over female star they have in the entire company. SmackDown doesn't have that right now. So naturally, they're expanding the show to 3 hours in a few months. And people, you know, some people think, oh, this is great. This is great because that means that there'll be more time for more people on the show. Well, yeah, for them, true. But if we keep getting stories like some of the stories we have here, I don't see how that's a good thing. I mean, I'm dreading that. I'll just tell you right now, I'm just fucking absolutely dread. 3 hours on a Friday night. I mean, I may not be going anywhere because I'm here doing this, but like, you're asking a lot of people on a Friday night to now commit 3 fucking hours if they want to watch the show live. That's number one. And look, in today's day and age, you don't have to watch the show live. And if you don't want to be spoiled by, you know, what happened, you just stay off social media. I don't have that luxury. But 3 hours is a lot to ask. And now you're going to have, you know, Raw's going to be 2 hours for the next few months, but they're going to go back to 3 hours most likely in January on Netflix. That's going to be 6 hours alone, not counting 2 hours from NXT. That's a lot. That's a lot. That's a big commitment to ask for from people. But if SmackDown was firing right now on all cylinders, it might not be so bad, but they're not. And the idea that you're going to take what we have here and expand it, stretch it out to 3 hours every single week, you know, if we're going to continue to get the shows like this that we're getting, I don't see how that's going to work. Yeah, the SmackDown roster needs a bit of a shakeup right now. They could actually use some people from Raw. That's why I'm thinking when the CM Punk Drew McIntyre thing is over, moving McIntyre to SmackDown may honestly be the best thing, not only for McIntyre, but for SmackDown. SmackDown needs heels. And that's another reason why the Kevin Owens heel turn, which seems to be coming very soon, is a good idea. Kevin Owens and or Randy Orton going heel is not just going to freshen them up. It's going to help SmackDown because this show needs fucking heels. And I don't just mean the bloodline. It can't just be the bloodline. You need more than just that. They need some top heels on this show, at least two. Drew McIntyre is somebody who can fill that role. But if this show is going to be expanded to 3 hours, holy shit. I mean, they're going to have to do something here. They're going to have to shake this show up in some way. Because 2 hours every week, I mean, 2 hours is barely, you know, able to keep me invested. Now you're going to expand it to three? What, are you fucking kidding me? I like what they did with Owens, though, on this show. And now I'm waiting to see how Randy Orton is going to react to all this. But if you didn't see the Cody and Roman segment, definitely give that a watch. That was the strongest segment on the entire show.
Watch out, watch out!
Ah! Oh! Oh my god, a classic. A classic Roman Reigns scene. How many of you remember that? When the scaffolding fell on top of him. Those are what I call the bad old days. We try not to think about those days too much. That was the big dog days. That's our new $27 super chat, by the way. Just added. The way I judge these things is, if it makes me laugh, if it's so stupid it makes me laugh, it's probably good enough for a super chat. That's how I judge these things. Am I entertained by them? The answer is yes. Chances are it'll pop up here at some point. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. 82%. Thumbs up for SmackDown tonight, 17% thumbs down. I'm not in the thumbs down column. I'm not in the thumbs down column, but I'm also not in the enthusiastic thumbs up column. It's going to take a hell of a lot more than what we saw tonight from getting enthusiastic thumbs up out of me. But you can vote at Solomonster. It's where the polls are always posted, so you guys know where to go. Hey, Base Beerus. Thank you, sir. Let me go back to the beginning here, and I want to start with the real CS. Kick things off with him before I even went live. The real CS chimed in with a super chat and said, with the Lucha Bros reportedly signing with WWE and skipping NXT, where do you see them going, Raw or SmackDown? Well, first of all, that is not confirmed, and I will tell you that Mike Johnson over on PW Insider says that they are still under contract to AEW. So there is some discrepancy here between news reports about who is signed and not signed. They are likely going to WWE, but they are still under contract, according to him, to AEW, which means they cannot negotiate. They cannot have conversations with anybody else. They certainly can't sign anything with anybody until they are out of their AEW deals. So that is just a rumor at this point. That is where things stand. If they go directly to the main roster, when and if they sign with WWE, to be honest with you, the tag team divisions on both shows need depth. So if they go to SmackDown, they're going to be very helpful to SmackDown. If they go to Raw, they will be a nice boost to the Raw tag team division. I would send them to Raw, personally. You've got the Creed Brothers, and you've got, I mean, you've got Alpha Academy, Creed Brothers, Wyatt Six. Who are the other key teams right now on Raw? Who am I missing on the Raw side? SmackDown, we know we have DIY, Street Profits, and Bloodline. And I guess Theory and Waller, I don't expect them to be a team for that much longer. But for me, I probably would go Raw. Well, I guess Raw has Balor and McDonough as well. But that's where things stand with Penta and Rey Fénix. Still under contract to AEW. Hard to sign with WWE when you're still under contract to Tony Khan. Holiday 197, hoping we can get a Kevin Owens versus Jacob Fatu singles match before Owens turns heel. That would be a fun match to watch. We still have not had a Jacob Fatu singles match, have we? That would be a fun match. Josiah Ball, thank you for the $4. Solo is the GOAT. Thank you, Josiah. Smoking dry chicken without flavor says AEW Grand Slam on Wednesday is going to have less flavor to the show. It's going to taste like tuna sandwich. Also, Solomonster, they're your favorite girl, Sexy Red, is coming back to NXT. Shawn the Chef Michaels putting flavor on the show. Well, you'll have to let me know when Sexy Red is going to be on. I'll be sure not to watch. Jerome Eugenio, is this the start of a best of seven for Vinci and Cruz? God, I hope not. We're in the midst of a best of seven with Carmelo Hayes and Andrade. We don't need one with Vinci and Apollo Cruz. One is enough. Hey, Knack, what's going on, Knack? Got some sick designs for TNT I sent to your IG if you like what you see. I'll have to check that out. Thank you, brother. I have not been on IG all day. Thank you, sir, for the support. Bobby's World with a $100 super chat bomb. I've been on the bench too long, he says. My turn. Your turn indeed. Bobby's World making a grand return. I love it. Love to see it. Fire Panda also with a $102 super chat. Not sponsored. I have a structured settlement and I need cash now. Call Jay. Oh my God. Is this what you were referring to? I have a structured settlement and I need cash now. Call J.G. Wentworth, 877-CASH now. I have an annuity, but I need cash now. Call J.G. Wentworth, 877-CASH now. Great, now I had that stuck in my fucking head again. Thanks a lot. I had it stuck in my head after that episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and now I have it stuck in my head again. Hey, J.G. Wentworth, by the way, hey, you want to work out a deal here? I'll be more than happy to sponsor J.G. Wentworth. Hit me up. Let's make something happen. Fire Panda says, okay, Solomonster. 100% authorized access to the WWE warehouse. Oh, I get 100% authorized access to the WWE warehouse. And have full permission to post all of your findings on YouTube or have a dinner date with Mariah May. I will be having dinner with Mariah May. And all you nerds can go searching through the warehouse. Did you really just ask me if I would rather go through a warehouse in Connecticut or get a dinner date with Mariah May? What's wrong with you? Mr. Rod with the 20. The Roman Reigns Cody Rhodes segment was straight cinema. And was great. Plus, anybody and their grandma can see the KO heel turn is bound to happen. So is that why a month ago I had people telling me, you can't turn Kevin Owens heel? It's got to be Randy Orton. You can't turn Kevin Owens heel. Singing a different tune now, aren't you? Mr. Rod with another 20. Don't know if you remember the show Live. Why? Of course I do. I used to try calling into the show. But if so, did you like it? And if WWE decided to ever bring it back, do you think it would work with the current product? I think that, no, it would not work. I think you'd have too many people just trying to crank call them. But I liked Livewire when it was actually live. And then they changed the format. It was an innovative concept for the time. And there were some memorable moments from that show. One of the memorable moments, I mean, everybody talks about when Vince was on. And Paul Heyman called in as Bruce from Connecticut. But I think back to when Austin was in studio and there was a woman who called up and she said, she kind of put him over and praised him and said he's a star on the rise. But, you know, one thing that might hold you back is all of the cussing and the swearing. And I think it's very much beneath you or whatever it was that she said. She took issue with Austin's potty mouth, basically. And, she said that it would hinder him. It would hinder his career. And then I'll never forget, Austin's like, you keep mouthing off to be like that. If you were in studio standing here in front of me right now, I might hinder your life. When I look back on that, I'm like, I think things turned out okay. I think things turned out quite well for Steve Austin. Yeah, Jim Ross. Yeah, that's right. Jim Ross. That's another memorable one. Jim Ross and that sweater. And he was trying to cycle through the calls and just all these dumb calls or just like kids calling in who were nervous. And boy, JR did not have any patience that day. He was not in the mood. I'm telling you, man, there were a lot of memorable moments from that show. I wish they would put that up on Peacock. I don't think it's up there. Hisco 95, thank you for the 16. This segment between Cody and Roman was pure cinema. Oh, feel the hair on the back of my neck standing up. It brings Goku and Vegeta vibes with KO mostly. I agree. With KO most likely turning heel, do you think it happens at Bad Blood? And do you think it will keep Cody occupied until War Games? I do think it'll keep him occupied. I'm torn on whether it happens at Bad Blood or maybe the first SmackDown after Bad Blood. I think it could happen at Bad Blood. And if it does, that could be one reason to headline the show with it. Because I felt like the Hell in a Cell match should close the show. If they have a major turn or a major angle plan, though, for that tag team match, they could very well close the show with that. I mean, it is the two biggest stars in the company teaming up. So, would not shock me at all if they close with the tag team match. Richie. With the 10. Where are we on the likes, by the way? I haven't checked. Oh, buy, sell, or rent. Ah, okay. Why was I thinking Stone Cold? Yeah, the Broken Skull Ranch. I'm like, BSR? What? I'm thinking, Jesus Christ. So, yeah, my mind was on something completely different when I saw BSR. Okay, so buy, sell, or rent. I get it now. Katrina, Tiffany, or Mariah? Oh, boy. Mm-mm-mm. I am going to buy on Katrina. I'm going to rent on Mariah. And I'm going to sell on Tiffany Stratton. JR, I hope that answers your question. Richie. What's going on, Solomonster? How would you rank Triple H, his rivalry with each member of his fellow Evolution? Wait. How would you rank Triple H rivalry with each member of his fellow Evolution member? And who rivalry was your... Okay, I get it. I've seen enough to understand. Well, Triple H and Batista would get my vote. So I think that was the best feud of them all. It certainly made them a lot of money in 2005. That WrestleMania was very successful, largely on the back of Batista challenging for the World Heavyweight Championship. And after that one, I would probably go with Triple H and Orton by default. Not that it was a great feud. And then Triple H and Flair. My favorite, like I said, would be Triple H and Batista. ABK, oh my god. What a return for ABK. ABK is back with the biggest bomb of them all. And I think I just swallowed a bug. In fact, I know I did. Well, what are you going to do? He was right there. He was on top of the mic. And then I think I swallowed him. So, rest in peace. What's the worst that can happen, right? ABK with a $300 super chat. Wow. It's like, you know, Austin had that t-shirt, like, arrive, raise hell, and leave. And that's ABK, you know? He arrives. Actually, you know what? In the spirit of that, we've got ABK. There you go. His initials have been etched into the lower left-hand corner of our Super Chat segment here. He is officially tattooed. He is burned into the stream. ABK, thank you. I hope you're doing well, wherever you may be. Your patronage is very much appreciated. Wow. Man. Solo fly. It wasn't a fly. It was like a... I don't know. It's like a gnat something. I don't know. It was tiny. Whatever it was tiny. Tiny and easily digestible now. As the acids will mutate it into something. Maybe there'll be some kind of creature now growing inside me. It's probably good protein, though. Noel Mulligan. Hi, Solomonster. From, Mayfield, Cork, Ireland. All the way from Ireland. Well, hello, Noel. All the way from Ireland. I've not been to Ireland. I should probably make my way over there one of these years. Celerot with the $10 super chat. I think Cody and Roman should lose at Bad Blood due to them not getting along. This would force Roman to make up with Jimmy and Jay. I think if they lose, it could very well be because of Kevin Owens getting involved. Donny Yasu, what's your favorite top rope finisher? I don't know that I've ever seen a more beautiful looking finish than when Pac goes to the top rope and hits that black arrow. I just think it's a fucking thing of beauty. Avwunu with the $7. SmackDown needs something. Should not have put the tag team titles on the bloodline. Street Profits against DIY could have been good. 20-minute Jericho match in 2024. Straight pain. I said it the other night. Jericho, you do not need to give 20 minutes to Chris Jericho in the ring like they did the other night. And it was better than most of his recent matches, but even still, he did not need 20 minutes on that show. Bliss fan, how did I know that you were going to say Twisted Bliss? I knew you were going to say it before you even typed it. Fallen Footwear says Celerot sounds disturbing. Yeah, but is it any more disturbing than me swallowing a bug live on the air? David Thiering with the 27. I think that was our first. I think you broke in the new $27 one. Just like Wednesday when I broke in the new $15 super chat. I am genuinely curious to find out what this new one is. Have a great weekend, Solo, and enjoy an extra drink on me after a great week. I will do so. David, thank you, man. We've had a great week, and you've been a big part of it, so I appreciate that. Esru with the 15. When Asuka returns, she should ditch damage control, become women's champion, and remain a dominant champion like she was in NXT. I miss the days when no one could defeat her. I do too. That was Asuka at her best in WWE. JR Vichair, again, Esru, thank you, man. JR says that was supposed to be, oh, a fuck, marry, kill. Yeah, but you said BSR, that's buy, sell, rent. You didn't say fuck, marry, kill. Well, that's what it was. I don't think it would change. I think it would be exactly the same way. Ricky Cornflakes with the $4.99. I came in late. Did my boy Cameron Grimes return? Cameron Grimes is no longer with WWE. Where have you been? Cameron Grimes got let go months ago. Kung Fu Joseph, hey Solo, are we getting a special review for the Vince doc? Once I watch the episodes, whenever I wrap them all up, I don't know how quickly I'll get through them. I think they're all dropping at the same time because it's Netflix and that's what they do. So that's on Wednesday. And Wednesday is also Grand Slam. I don't know that I'll get through all six episodes on Wednesday, but once I am done with them, I will review them either as a special or on the podcast. So yes, I will be talking about them once I watch them. Bobby Means with the 5. SmackDown can not only use Drew McIntyre, but also some call-ups from NXT that would greatly improve the show. NXT may have the best women's division. NXT has been in the conversation for years now for best women's division, so... You know, WWE, their women's division in totality, I would say, is the strongest anywhere in the business right now. The booking is not always great, but in terms of the talent roster they have, female talent roster, I would put WWE at number one. AEW is nipping at their heels. They got a very strong women's division as well. But NXT, they know what they're doing, you know, with their women down there. You know, and they're really... developing a lot of quality female talent that will help carry this women's division for years to come. Yeah, you got your Sol Rukas, and you've got your Jada Parkers, and you've got Lola Vice, and you've got Roxanne Perez. Oh, here it is. Aha, so I didn't swallow the bug. He's still flying around. I thought I swallowed him. All right, so that's good news. I didn't swallow a bug. See, this night just gets better and better. It's good news all around. Arabian Night 2000. Issue with SmackDown post-draft is in the mid-card. It doesn't help that they lost Lashley and are not using AJ and Nakamura. Gable and Drew should switch brands. I mentioned that the other night, too, about American Maid. Get them on SmackDown. All three of them. Or four of them, if you count Ivy Nile. But see, this is where I would like to see trade interactions between the general managers from both brands. Let them broker one big blockbuster deal. Send AJ to Raw. Send McIntyre to SmackDown. Send American Maid to SmackDown. Like, why are we not seeing trades? Even one every now and then between the general managers. I mean, SmackDown could use the help right now. Why are we not seeing this? Base Beerus says, I meant Fire Panda's icon that you made for him. Or her. I see. DEH Sires, LA Knight was trying a big bro Andrade at the end. It felt like it, didn't it? He was big leaguing him there. Kung Fu Joseph with the $4.99. If we had gotten the Roman versus Goldberg Georgia rivalry, they would have had promos at both Georgia schools. Goldberg must be pissed right now. Now, he's still sore that he didn't get his retirement match that the sex pest supposedly promised him. Fire Panda, it's your money. Use it when you need it. Call J.G. Wentworth. 877-CASH. Now, I think you are working for them. You say you're not, but I'm starting to question that. Justin G, for a great low rate, you can get online. Go to the General and save some time. Oh, my God. Boney, who is more hated, 2010's John Cena or modern Jericho? 2010's John Cena. He had a lot more people in the buildings booing him than Chris Jericho does. And DEH Sires, was watching the build to Cena Rock 1, and it was truly special how big it felt at the time. Will we ever see a one-year build like it again? Yeah, I think we will. I don't know if it'll feel as big as that did. You had that star from the past generation against the current era, the modern era. But yeah, we'll get another match like that with the one-year build. At some point, I don't know when. Could be Rock and Roman. If they don't do Rock and Roman at 41 and save it for 42, maybe they start the build a year in advance. Who knows? Forever is a long time. I think we'll get it. There's the Fire Panda logo. Hey, Richie, thank you, man. Oh, man. Richie with another $20 super chat drop. Happy Batman Day, Solomonster. Do you think they should do a Hart Family movie? Because to me, it's a little tragic, like the Von Erichs. A little tragic. And if they do, should they show the Montreal Screwjob as a movie scene? I mean, you have to at least acknowledge it. I don't know that I don't think they need to, you know, make it a central part of the film, but yeah, it probably should be in there. No, I mean, the Hart family is also very I wouldn't say as tragic as the Von Erich family. I mean, nothing will be to me, in terms of wrestling families and, you know, just Kevin Von Erich in 93, I guess, when Kevin committed suicide, he did an interview with a local news station. And the quote that always stays with me is, I used to be a brother and now I ain't got no brothers anymore. Like, it was just the way he said it. It was like, man, that's like, that cuts deep. But yeah, you got a lot of material there with the Hart family. A lot of it very sad, unfortunately, but you do have a lot of material there. We are currently at 422 likes, which is very cool. Thank you guys for that. Shout out to Harry. This is buy or sell on the better heel, MJF for 2009 Randy Orton. 2009 Randy Orton, I think into the beginning of 2010, was on another level. But I would probably go, I'd probably go MJF. He's got a little more of that old school heel in him. Both great heels, though, from like Orton from that period and MJF. But I would probably go MJF. It's close, though. All right, let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Here we go. We end the week with Be the Booker the way it should be. This is the way it should always be. And let's see how we do. We're going to begin here with Tag Team Be the Booker, as we usually do. And we begin with the Judgment Day. Look at this. These two men are going to go to war at Bad Blood. But they used to be tag team partners. Damian Priest and Finn Balor. I'm going to start calling him Finn Balor from now on, just because I think it's funny. So we got Finn Balor and Damian Priest kicking us off here in Be the Booker. They will be taking on the Bushwhackers. Well, damn. That's not how I want this to start Be the Booker. I thought we'd get a clean sweep tonight for all you guys. Boy, was I wrong. Oh, boy. Poor Priest. Yeah, poor Priest. He's going to get licked by the Bushwhackers. All right, women's Be the Booker. It is the women's world champion, Liv Morgan. Here we go. Liv Morgan is going to defend that women's world title. And she's going to defend that women's world title against the TBS champion, Mercedes Moné. Now there's a match that I can get behind. Champion against champion, WWE against AEW. Who do you have in that match? Who are you picking in that match? Between Mercedes Moné and Liv Morgan. I know who I'm picking. I want to know who you're picking. All right, tiebreaker time. All comes down to this. It's Kane with his shitty mask from the latter part of his career that I didn't like. Kane is in Be the Booker here in the main event. And Kane will be stepping into the ring with Matt Jackson of the Young Bucks. We had a loser of a night in Be the Booker. We went 1-3. I'm sorry I let you all down. I let everybody down. I wanted a clean sweep, and I went 1-3. Matt Jackson against Kane in the main event. Now, the other day, it was Nick and somebody else. I don't think it was. Was it Kane? Was it Kane? I thought it was somebody else. You know, the funny thing is, I took Nick out after that, and I completely forgot that Matt was still in there. So now we'll have Matt Jackson floating around in men's Be the Booker in singles matches. Well, it was, okay, Blitzfan says it was Kane against, I guess maybe Kane has it out for the Young Bucks. Was it Kane against Nick? Are you serious? It was 97 Kane. Oh my God, okay. What are the chances of that? Shout out to Nier, who's been a channel member for 9 months. It's been 3 years for Nier 316. Remind everybody what it says. I'll tell you exactly what it says. Nier 316 means he just kicked cancer's ass. I think we could all get behind that. Shout out to Nier. I hope you're doing well. That is awesome. Can't believe it's been 3 years. That's great. Justin G celebrating a year and a half of channel membership. I can tell from that spiffy looking red skull that you got next to your name there. Damien the Fiend, shout out to Damien. Just listen to your rant about Michael Jackson. Totally agree with you. You know, I still get comments about that to this very day. That was that was Sound Off episode 75. Right after Michael Jackson passed away in 2009. If you want to know what that's all about, you can go back and check that out in the archives. All right, thank you guys. This has been a hell of a night. Back to back beastly streams here on a Friday night. You love to see it. Oh, we're not done yet. We got Richie. Richie's going to get the last word with a $20 super chat. Coming in hot. Richie says, why did Kane chokeslam CM Punk through a table at the Royal Rumble in 2014? I never understood that. I'm guessing being that Punk was going to fight Triple H at WrestleMania 30 and Kane was with the Authority, was that just seeds being planted? Well, didn't Punk eliminate Kane? Is that what happened? I don't remember who eliminated Kane. I thought it was just that, like, Kane maybe got eliminated by him and he was just getting his revenge. But if not, I mean, that explanation would make sense. I just don't recall offhand. But Richie, thank you. That was CM Punk's last night in a WWE ring for a decade. Who knew? JR with the $2. Red House, where... What is Red House? What? Where white people and black people buy furniture? Red House? I don't know what that is. Tactical Butt Cheek. One of my favorites. Banned German Ninja Turtle commercial Salamonster is GOAT. Yeah, you ever want to see a funny video? On YouTube, they have compilation videos of like foreign commercials and commercials that have been banned. Like, you see some of these foreign commercials. There's a birth control commercial with a guy with his son in like the supermarket that's actually fucking hilarious. And the son, it's been a while since I've seen it. He takes something that he wants to buy, candy or whatever, and puts it in the cart. The father takes it out. The kid puts it back. The father takes it out. And the kid just, I mean, this spoiled little brat just throws the biggest meltdown you've ever seen. In the middle of the store, everyone's turning around. Everyone's looking. And you have no idea what the commercial is for. And then I think it's for like a condom brand or something. It's like a birth control commercial. I'm like, okay, that's great. That's great. Like, you'd never see that air here in this country, but like, that's great. Justin G says, they know better. Hey, you know what? I'm grateful I don't have to hear that anymore. TLA, as soon as I get the chance, brother. It's on my list. People brought that up a couple weeks ago, too. As soon as I get around to it, I'm hoping shortly, because it's literally on my list. I have a list, like 15 different tasks I have to do. That's near the top, to work on RSPW Rewind. Base Beerus, did I ever see Old Boy? I did not. Did not see Old Boy. JR says it's a commercial, YouTube it, called Red House. Oh, okay. Yeah, I know. I've never heard of that before. So it's a furniture store. Boots just showed up and said, the first thing I hear is butt cheek. See, that's how you know you're in the right place, though. Like, if you were wondering, where am I? And then you hear tactical butt cheek, then you know, oh, okay, I'm on Salamonster Street. Welcome, Boots, by the way, who apparently just arrived. Fashionably late. Did I like Beetlejuice? I did. I didn't love it, but I liked it. I thought it was enjoyable for what it was. Obviously can't hold a candle to the original, but I think it kind of keeps that same spirit as the original. I mean, no pun intended. Haha. But it keeps the same spirit as the original. Do I have any wrestling trading cards? I do. I do. Random ones that I've picked up over the years. I've got a few. Yeah, no, again, Old Boy, I've never seen Old Boy. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Don't forget Mako. Double A beep beep MCO. Was I addicted to all the old WWF or WWE ice cream bars? I used to have them. Yeah. I used to love those. Pisco says, favorite Sopranos scene or episode? Also, have you watched the other acclaimed drama shows like Breaking Bad, The Wire, or Mad Men? I have seen all of those except Mad Men. Mad Men I did not watch. I'm actually in the middle of the West Wing right now. And I'm enjoying that. Appropriate that we landed on the Bushwhackers and Be the Booker tonight, isn't it? And we get Bushwhacker solo. Amazing how that works. Yeah, no, Breaking Bad I've seen, The Wire I've seen, Sopranos I've seen. Favorite Sopranos scene? I mean, that's tough because there's so many of them. I mean, how can you not love the Russian in the woods? You know, when Christopher and Paulie go looking for him. And he was, oh God, the, you know, Paulie says he was an interior decorator. I'm like, that whole episode, though, that whole episode is just fucking great. But I want to say maybe it was the episode called White Caps, was it? I mean, there was that one really intense scene. You want to see great acting where Tony comes home and he finds Carmela throwing all of his clothes out the window. And he goes in the house, he goes upstairs, she locks herself in the bedroom, he gets her to come out. Like, if you've seen the show, you know what I'm talking about. That, to me, acting-wise, that's the best scene in the entire series. Like, that was intense. And the follow-up scene, where they're, where are they? In the basement or wherever they are. They have that follow-up scene where she tells him that she lays in bed next to him, fantasizing about Furio, and then he puts his hand through the wall. Like, you're talking about an acting tour de force. Oh my God, that was just fucking amazing. Pace Beer says, Jackie robbing the card game. Yeah, not such a great idea. Jungle Jesus with the $2 says, got attacked with an axe in January. Cracked skull. Holy shit. Are you serious? Well, how are you doing? You can't leave me hanging like that. I hope you're doing okay. Attacked with an axe and got a cracked skull in January. My God. Bass Beerus says APA theme is awesome. Yeah, it was a good one. Christian, thank you for the super chat. And Bass Beerus says, again, Jackie robbing the card game, which I already mentioned. So, thank you, sir. That's crazy. An axe. Peter Pan, I don't know. It probably didn't go through. YouTube is like that sometimes. Harry says, your birthday is coming up in October. Do you have any plans? Yeah, I'm going to be podcasting. That's my plan. My whole birthday weekend, the day before my birthday, is bad blood. So I will be live on YouTube that night. And then on my birthday, I will be working all day because I have to put a podcast out. So I will wake up that morning and I will try to get my notes finalized coming off the pay-per-view the night before. And then I will record and then I will edit everything, and I will post-produce, and I will upload, and I will post, and I will share, and I will cut the audio for the clips, and I will work on the thumbnails, all of which I do on my own, and I will turn around, and it'll be time to eat dinner, and then it'll be time to go to bed. Happy birthday to me. But thank you for asking, Harry. Jungle Jesus says, I'm okay now, brother. Kind of. Well, I hope so, man. That's scary. Might I ask what the circumstances were behind that? That's insane. Chris Mikesell, have a great weekend. Which finisher do you prefer, the Rude Awakening or Jake the Snake's DDT? Jake's DDT. Absolutely. All right, some good questions. Thank you guys for the little AMA here. And thank you for all the love. Again, we had a monster night here tonight. We got appearances from everybody, man. Almost everybody. We had ABK in here earlier. And we had Fire Panda dropping bombs. I mean, so many, I can't even remember them all. Of course, David. And everybody in between. Thank you so much. It's been an incredible week going back to last Friday. You guys killed it. Make it all worth it. The next time I am live with you will be Monday night. And we'll talk about Monday Night Raw. Before then, of course, episode 880 of The Sound Off drops on Sunday. So in the afternoon, be sure to keep your eyes peeled for that. And please go ahead and share when the episode comes out. That always helps. You can leave comments on Spotify now. Leave a review, Apple Podcast, that also helps. And hit that like button on your way out. So be well, stay safe, have a great weekend. And Jungle Jesus says, I heard a girl screaming. I went to help and got hit with the axe 3 times. My God. Well, you're a hero, brother. A lot of people would not have done that. But he heard trouble and he went to go help. And unfortunately, this is what ends up happening. That's crazy. Well, look, I'm sure you're still recovering, obviously, but you're here with us right now, and that's all that matters. So I'm glad to hear you're doing better. That's very, very crazy and very, very scary. But my best to you, brother. Have yourselves a good weekend, and I'll see you back here for the Raw post-show live on YouTube on Monday night. Until then, take care, guys.